Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the SmackDown Summary here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, issue number 85 of Kill My Soul, Stop Making Me Fucking Do This, aka Watch SmackDown for the SmackDown Summary. I'm with Sandra. Hi, Sandra.
Hi, Kenny. I watched SmackDown again this week. Know how excited I was about that? I wasn't very excited at all. I wasn't very excited at all because SmackDown's so bad.
It's like a land where good storytelling has died. And the Road Dogg is in charge.
Pretty much. Remember when SmackDown had compelling stories and multiple women's stories and women actually felt like people and everything was grand and everything made sense and things were lovely? Those times are long gone. Long gone. What the hell is SmackDown on? I was like actively angry watching SmackDown this week. Because there were so many things that just didn't make any sense to me. It was another one of those weeks where it wasn't just super boring, because I feel like last week was maybe better than some weeks because it was boring and it basically put me into a coma, but
it did have John Cena versus AJ Styles.
It did have John Cena versus AJ Styles, and nothing was so egregiously bad that I got really angry about it. And this show had some stuff on it. One thing in particular that I just do not understand what they're doing. I don't understand. We're gonna get there.
The one thing that I would say is, I guess a plus point is at least Fastlane is in Sunday. Like, I feel like we've been waiting for Fastlane for about 6 months.
It feels that way. It really does. I mean, how a pay-per-view called Fastlane should not feel like it's this stuck in the mud, right? Like, it is anything but a Fastlane.
Yeah. This is a roadblock. Yes. This is the most literal name for a roadblock I've ever seen.
I mean, I wish it were end of the line. Fortunately, this is going to continue.
Yes, but we'll be recording Fastlane over on Patreon on Sunday/Monday. Usually it's like, hey, join Patreon to hear us talk about the show. Join us to hear us complain about it. I guess.
Probably. I mean, unless something major happens and it ends up being a great show, it's not going to be a great show. It's really not.
But at least it has the intrigue of, oh God, please don't let John Cena into that match.
Right? I mean, that is intriguing for sure, because can you even imagine? Can you imagine how raging I would be? Like, he showed up on Raw, right? And I don't know. I threw up my hands. Like, I literally was watching it on my computer and I just threw up my hands in my home being like, why the fuck are you on Raw? Raw's supposed to be a show where I don't have to watch you. I like Raw. Raw is fun. Raw is a good time, right? And I'm not supposed to have to watch John Cena on Raw because he waltzes onto SmackDown, is like, hey, so I'm back on SmackDown because I'm a free agent because I decided to just say whatever to your draft. And you know, now I'm going to show up on Raw because I want to be able to cut a promo uninterrupted and I have that freedom? Really? Just because you're John Cena? Okay, sure. Why not? Like, I am so angry at John Cena's existence, and I have never been this angry at John Cena's existence. I've always been someone who defended John Cena. I cheered for John Cena for a long time. And I know that there are listeners to this who, you know, John Cena is their favorite wrestler, and I get it. That's fine. Like, he can be really good. Well,
one listener.
Karan and Callum both really like John Cena.
But Callum, he's not Callum's favorite. Callum has, Karan has a problem. That's all we'll say.
No, he's Callum's favorite, too.
Oh, God, there's
Callum
two of them?
Callum Hogan, yeah.
God, start a club.
I know, right? But, I mean, I used to like John Cena, and I used to defend John Cena, and especially when he did his U.S. title thing, I thought that was really good. But now I'm just getting actively angry every time he's on my screen.
I have a theory, actually, of what they're doing. I think that they are trying to stack the deck against you booing The Undertaker. So what they're thinking is, right, she's just watched a fun thing on Retro Raw. She's kind of like, okay, I've watched some character development, I've watched some story. And then she thinks, right, well, if we can make John Cena give zero fucks in any way, shape, or form, maybe it'll get to a point where Sandra's so angry at John Cena, she just wants to see somebody take him out, no matter who it is.
So really, this is all catering to me, is what you're
I
saying.
I think so.
Okay.
I mean, Can you see any other? Show me another way that makes more sense. Show me something that makes more sense than what they're doing.
No. I mean, I think you're onto it. I think you have cracked the case.
In all seriousness, I think the storyline is fine, and I get it. My main issue is just that I think the free agent thing has been handled really badly the whole time. Like, why was he on Team SmackDown, but he never came and cut a promo about it? Then he was back on Raw. Now he's on SmackDown for sloppy seconds. Like, yeah, he's terrible.
And the general managers are just okay with it. I mean, like, again, I think I said last week, if they would invite him to their show, it would be different. But it's just him doing what he wants, when he wants, showing up, speaking when he wants. And I get that. I mean, it's smart of them to use him on Raw to promote Fastlane because more people are going to be watching Raw, right? And it's cross-promotion, and he can be like, hey, so you should watch this pay-per-view that I'm going to be on because it's really super important. It's not. But, you know, he can pretend that it's really super important, and maybe they can get more viewers that way. But it's just, I don't know, John Cena as a character just being able to do whatever he wants to do just reminds me of peak bad DX.
Now, if you don't listen to Retro Raw, that is pretty much the worst insult that Sandra could give him. Pretty much.
Yeah,
I think.
No, I hate them. I hate them a lot.
Now, before we talk about SmackDown, we will be doing a new Yellow Ropes Forever over on Patreon at the weekend, where we're going to talk about the Bobby Fish injury. Abby Laith is gone, Sandra. We're going to talk about that in more detail, but do you want to say a few eulogy words right now?
Okay, so I'm really super bummed about this, like really super bummed about this. I think she will be fine because she is incredibly talented and she's, I'm sure, going to return to the indies and make herself heaps of money because she's great. And I don't understand why they've cut Abby Laith, and Sage Beckett is gone as well, which doesn't make sense. I don't know if they're just cutting women who have not stereotypical body types, which doesn't make me happy. I don't know what they're doing. I don't understand it. She's so talented, and yet they have women on their roster like Liv Morgan. What even are you doing? Like, the prospect of Abby Laith versus Nikki Cross was awesome. The prospect of Abby Laith versus Dakota Kai was awesome. The prospect of Abby Laith versus so many people was great in my mind. I really wanted Abby Laith versus Ruby Riott, or I really wanted Abby Laith to team with Ruby Riott. And actually, one of my rants here is that the Riott Squad, Kenny, would have made so much more sense with Abby Laith instead of Liv Morgan. Because Abby Laith and Ruby Riott actually have a history together. Like, they have a long history together. And so if Ruby Riott would have brought up Sarah Logan, who also wrestled on the indies and has some history, like, I don't know if they ever really wrestled each other. I'm just not as familiar with Sarah Logan's career. But if she brought up two other ladies who, like, worked and scratched and clawed on the indies and hadn't really gotten to be on NXT TV, but, you know, really kind of, they had a long history and they had stories of their own, and they can be like, hey, so we never got to be on TV and we really want to make an opportunity for ourselves. I would believe that a lot more than I believe Liv Morgan being with Ruby Riott.
It's a shame. I've got to believe there's something at play because, yeah, I don't think that they would have given her the spotlight in the Mae Young Classic had they intended to let her go. So it makes me feel like there's something else at play, but we'll see. I guess we'll see if anything comes out about it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean
Jazzy Gabert's not there.
Yeah, Jazzy Gabert's not there because of injury, correct?
Yes, so she's now getting surgery, neck surgery. So we'll see if she comes back.
I hope she does, but I mean, if they're in a cutting mood, then who knows what's going to happen. I don't know. The whole thing just bummed me out because I really, really like her. But I'm sure she'll be fine, and I look forward to seeing what she does in the indies then.
Well, let's look forward to SmackDown, Sandra. So,
is that possible?
No. So SmackDown Live, so I don't watch SmackDown on the night anymore. I barely watch it the next morning. I remember the next afternoon I need to sit through it. So, you know, I do it because I have to. But a couple of people said, I can't wait for Kenny to talk about the opening segment. And I was like, what? And then like somebody said it was a segment with Charlotte and Ruby Riott. And I was like, well, it sounds boring. It doesn't sound bad. But the glory is not in Charlotte or Ruby. The star of this episode was the beautiful robot that is Dasha Fuentes, who does not know how to do anything. She speaks into the camera. Then when she's introducing the wrestlers, she's introducing them to the camera in the ring, which nobody ever does.
I mean, maybe she's trying something different.
And then it points when she's when she's doing the interview, she sometimes looks at the camera and sometimes looks at the crowd. She doesn't know what she's doing. She's very confused. I feel like there was just like, I feel like she's like a child actor that you have somebody behind the camera throwing peanuts at them going, Dasha! Look sharp!
Yeah, that's probably the best summary of Dasha Fuentes. Like, I thought no one could really have less personality than Devon Taylor. And I think Dasha does emote more than Devon Taylor did. But, I mean, it's a low bar. Because Devon Taylor was really, really bad. And she had kind of a charm about her, right? Dasha is in every way a robot.
Oh, yeah. It is. It's done. Dasha's just atrocious, but you know, she makes me laugh sometimes, so at least that's something. So we have Charlotte come out, then she brings Ruby Riott out, who's joined by the rest of the squad that killed my soul. Ruby then does this promo where she talks about, you know, it all began on November 14th, 2017, when Charlotte won the SmackDown Women's title back. Charlotte's life's always been set up for success, you know, two-time Hall of Fame dad, first ever NXT Divas Raw SmackDown Women's Champion. There was a myth in that, you know, she formed the Riott Squad 2 weeks later to bring it down. Then Charlotte says, Charlotte, of course, has to stand and listen to all of us because she can't, you know, interrupt because that's not how talking works. And Charlotte says, you know, she created... life gave like great expectations for her, so she had to work harder to live under that weight, and she's every bit as good as Ruby had heard. Ruby then said it was handed to her. She would knock her down on Sunday, and she'd be just another bleach blonde loser with a last name. Charlotte gets in her face, the Riott Squad come in, but just as things are looking to happen, Bobby Roode interrupts to break the ice or something. So the compliment I'll give him is... No, he does nothing. I appreciate the attempt at trying to thread some sort of story, but I do not buy any single part of it. I'm not interested in it, and Charlotte cannot beat her soon enough, so this ends. What did you think of the segment?
So, I mean, I thought that they both made some good points. It's just, it hit me this week especially. One of the reasons that Ruby Riott versus Charlotte isn't clicking for me is that babyface Charlotte Flair versus heel Ruby Riott makes absolutely zero sense, right? Charlotte is standing there looking like a damn peacock, all full of pomp and circumstance, and being this, you know, tall, gorgeous, incredibly fit, incredibly gifted. I mean, she is genetically superior. It's not just a catchphrase. She's incredibly good at wrestling, and she picked it up so quickly, right? She is good at everything, and I believe Charlotte when I say she's had to work a lot harder because of her last name. I really do think that she had to kind of step out of her father's shadow, and damn did she. But she's standing there looking so tall and regal and amazing and perfectly groomed and put together, and then you have Ruby Riott coming out as kind of the scrappy underdog who really isn't the favorite here because, you know, she's shorter and she looks different and she's not your typical like gorgeous woman wrestler, right? She's, you know, she's alternative, she's scrappy, she's awesome. And so it just feels like the alignments are wrong here. And I think it's one of those odd cases where Ruby Riott just doesn't seem to be great at playing a heel, at least not this type of heel role. And I think that's pretty rare in wrestling. A lot of people will say, you know, it's easier to play a heel because you have more freedom and you can, you know, just be a dick to everyone and it's super fun. But I don't know. Ruby Riott's not great at that. She's just such a natural babyface and I want to get behind her. And then everything she's saying, I mean, about Charlotte having a last name, she's kind of almost mirroring what the welcoming committee said back in the day, but none of them have ever really had any weight behind their words. It's always just been, well, Charlotte's good at stuff and we don't like that, so we're gonna form a committee or a squad or something to take out Charlotte. But why exactly? Like, just because she's Charlotte? Like, if anyone else were champion, would they take them out too? Like, if Becky Lynch were champion, would it make sense to form a committee to take out Becky Lynch? I don't know. Like, it doesn't make that much sense to me that just Charlotte being champion is the impetus for the Riott Squad to come up and try to wreak havoc on SmackDown Live. But I do appreciate the attempt at storytelling. For some reason, Charlotte got under Ruby's skin and she had to form this squad and now she wants to take the championship from Charlotte. I understand the part of the story where it's, I want to be champion and I want to ruin you because you are the champion and I want to be. So that part of it works for me. I thought Charlotte came across okay here, but she is still very bad at sounding like a human in promos. Like, very bad at it. Ruby Riott, her lines might not have been great, but at least she delivered them and sounded human when she was saying them. But Charlotte's like, let me tell you something. I am the women's champion. Like, she's just... What? Who talks like that? No one talks like that. That's not human speech. I mean, was she too close to Dasha? Did she catch a bug?
Maybe, yeah. Maybe she caught the Dasha bug.
It's a problem for me.
It was boring. It was just, oh, the sooner an empress comes and finishes this, I'll be happy.
I mean, that would be lovely. I mean, the thing is, they have the start... They should have started this a long time ago, right? They should have had Ruby explain her motivation weeks ago, because so far it's just been a whole lot of nothing going on with the Riot Squad. And so I think it's almost too late to inject this right before Fastlane. They, you know, they could have started this and had this be the start of a story and then built from there. But instead they're like, oh, crap, we have this match at Fastlane. We should probably, like, explain some motivation since it's on Sunday. And this is what they came up with?
So Bobby Roode interrupts, which I'm the only thing I can guess is because they were partners in the mixed tag challenge or mixed match challenge. So I guess that's like, oh, he didn't want to see his pal get beat up, but he doesn't want to hit a woman. So he just comes out.
Which, okay, so here's the thing is even if Bobby Roode were going to team up with Charlotte against the Riot Squad still outnumber them, first of all. And Bobby Roode didn't do anything. Like, he just walked to the commentary table. So why did
he can't do anything?
Well, he can't do anything, exactly, and the Riot Squad know that he can't do anything. So why didn't they just keep attacking Charlotte? That just makes them look stupid. Again, the Riot Squad just looks stupid and ineffective, and it pisses me off.
I think the problem partly with the Riot Squad is even if, you know, they did have a good motivation, I don't believe that those three people would ever be a team. Ever.
There's no reason for them to be.
So, yeah, it didn't work. It continues to not work, but at least it's over on Sunday, I hope. They wanted to continue the pain by reminding us of what began the downward spiral of SmackDown, which was when Jinder became champion and just killed all legitimacy, by giving us Randy Orton versus Jinder Mahal with Bobby Roode on commentary, which is like getting syphilis and AIDS and then getting cancer on top of it.
I mean, it is dire, for sure. How sad is it to see Jinder's entrance with only one Singh brother?
One of the only good things about him.
I know, and now, like, I don't know, he just looks so lonely. Which one is injured and which one is not?
Sunil is the one that's there, so... What was the...
Sunil
and... Samir, so Samir's the injured one.
Okay, so Sunil Singh just looks so alone as he's doing the entrance, and I did kind of like that he looked for his brother, but he wasn't there, and it was so sad.
I do just also want to say, I have a recap in front of me, which is why I knew that. I don't randomly know which... Singh brother is which. Anyway, so they have this match, which is the same as every Jinder and Randy Orton match they have, because they have the same match. And
down to the part of Samir Singh being played by Bobby Roode at the end.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because, like, Sunil gets thrown through the announce table at one point, because, of course, Randy Orton cannot help but chuck Singh brothers through the announce table.
To be fair, one of my favorite Randy Orton pastimes is throwing Singhs about, so...
Yeah, I mean, it's always enjoyable to watch Randy Orton chuck Singh brothers about, I guess. I mean, I would prefer it with someone else other than Randy Orton. But the Singh brothers are very good at being chucked about into announce tables. It's one of their main features. And Bobby Roode gets up on the apron, distracts Randy Orton. Jinder Mahal hits the Colossus on Randy Orton. Like, are we just building to a triple threat? Is that what we're doing? Is Jinder going to be added to Bobby Roode versus Randy Orton? Would that violate the weird, unspoken bitch fest that is Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan not wanting to intrude on each other's matchmaking skills, but also want to intrude on each other's matchmaking skills? Does anyone care?
No, nobody does. It feels like Jinder's going to get involved on Sunday, and God forbid we might end up with Randy Orton, Jinder Mahal, and Bobby Roode in a triple threat at WrestleMania.
Pre-show, better be.
Yeah, see, the thing is, see if that is, like, I know you dislike Randy Orton to a huge extent, mm-hmm. but if that is WrestleMania, if I were him, I'd be getting in and going, you better have something good for me coming up, because this is dire. Like, I'm not saying Orton should be in the main event or anything, but he should be in something better than this. I mean, this is just... it's terrible.
I mean, everyone should be in something better than this, because this is really bottom of the barrel. This is ice cold as a feud. I mean, it all started like, because can you imagine a weird list that doesn't matter.
Which now, is the list gone now? Or anyway.
I don't know. And I mean, like I said last week, some feuds that are great can start from something super stupid. So if this super stupid list feud started something amazing, that'd be wonderful. But it's not. Like, it started Bobby Roode versus Randy Orton versus Jinder Mahal, which has been terrible. And I even wanted Jinder Mahal to get involved in the United States title scene, but it seems like anything Bobby Roode touches right now as a babyface is just the kiss of death.
It does. I also think that this kind of reminds, like, Randy Orton being in this kind of reminds me of when John Cena had to face Baron Corbin at SummerSlam.
Right.
Like, just a kind of nothing thing where you're like, okay.
I mean, Randy Orton's not as big a deal as John Cena, but I understand what you mean.
Yeah. So, in the
end, Randy Orton's not going to other shows just demanding title opportunities because he can't get it done on the one show, right?
Yeah, exactly. Randy Orton doesn't, at least he doesn't do that, I guess. So, yeah, like you say, Sunil Singh gets chucked into the announce table. And then he tosses Jinder Mahal into Bobby Roode. Orton then hits his draping DDT, goes for an RKO, but Bobby Roode jumps on the apron to cause a distraction, which allows Jinder to hit the class and get the win. So Jinder is cleverer than the two of them.
And it is the end to every Jinder Mahal match ever.
Mm-hmm. Then backstage you get Sammy and Kevin, they're having a chat.
What was Bobby Roode's motivation for even getting on the apron? Like, what does that help him? Just because he wants Randy Orton to lose after he bangs on commentary about, I respect Randy Orton, but I do not respect Jinder Mahal, but I want Jinder Mahal to win this match for reasons?
I think it's one of those stupid, like, in the heat of sportsmanship, you do things that are silly.
It's so stupid.
Sammy and Kevin are talking backstage. Kevin Owens reminded Sammy that it's every man for himself, but, you know, he previously said he was going to lie down and let Kevin become the champion. Kevin said he almost can't believe he would do that for him. It's too good to be true. He's such a good guy. And Sami Zayn said no one would be paying attention to him if it weren't for Kevin, and he's the only reason he's in the six-pack challenge. His time will come, but this is Owen's chance to become a Grand Slam champion. He's really proud of him when it happens, and they hug. And it was a little hint of loveliness in a land with dread.
This was adorable. This was adorable, and they were friends, and they were true friends, and I thought, oh no, what is going to happen? Because they were just such good friends in this segment, and it was beautiful, and Sammy, you know, he reaffirmed the fact that, yeah, he would lie down for Kevin Owens because it's Kevin's time, and Kevin's going to become the WWE champion, so Sammy says on Sunday, and it's going to be great, but, you know, things were to go slightly awry in the main event, and I think we'll talk about it more there.
Yep, I agree. So then we got a selfie promo from Baron Corbin, whose hairline has just seemed to fall off a cliff.
His hairline's on top of his head if he's looking for it. I still love that line from last week from Kevin Owens.
He talks about, you know, I mean, I've got to give them credit. They did at least put in there that, you know, John Cena cost Baron Corbin his money in the bank. So, you know, that's why he's going to go after Cena. We'll see.
But I mean, he's going to go after Cena, but he's also going after AJ Styles' championship. It's not like John Cena is the champion right now. And John Cena wasn't even on this show, I mean, which was a blessing for me. Also, the graphics are still terrible and they bug me.
Oh, they're terrible. There's a great video. You probably find it if you go on Facebook or something. It's basically Pipe Bomb 2018 edition.
I saw that, and it's like flashing the belt up as CM Punk is talking. There are emojis and stuff.
So good. We got an excellent video package highlighting the New Day and the Usos, where I was like, yeah, I want to see it again. So I actually kind of wish, in a way, I know you and I will disagree on this, I kind of wish this was maybe a WrestleMania match, because it actually feels like a long feud with a lot of video stuff that could have kind of been like a culmination thing. But I get that they're, you know, doing it here and introducing something new afterwards. So, but I'm really looking forward to the match, is the point.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it as well. I mean, this last week's promo got me super hyped for it. And then this video package, which incorporated a lot of last week's promo, it just, I don't care how many times I've seen this match. I know I've seen it over and over and over and over and over. And I don't care, because I want to see it again. And it feels like somehow they're managing to make it feel like it's still the progression of a story and like they need to fight again somehow, which is a testament to them in these dark, dark times of SmackDown Live.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine that's going to be anything but match of the night on Sunday, but we'll see. Then we go to the worst booked Royal Rumble winner in years, Shinsuke Nakamura, who is there saying that he hopes that AJ wins so he can kick him in the face at WrestleMania. Rusev walks up and told Nakamura that he broke Caden English's voice with a knee to the throat, and then he challenges him to a match at Fastlane, and Nakamura accepts. And Nakamura said if he wins, it would be Nakamura Day. And then Rusev yells, you can't create your own holiday, which was funny, but I do question why you would want to take Nakamura, who's a babyface, and put him against the guy that's held back that everybody wants to see more of.
And that it's everyone's chanting decision. For. I mean, when Rusev and Aiden English came in on this segment, and when Aiden English tried to sing and couldn't because his voice was broken, I mean, how do you think I felt, Kenny? Do you think that I felt, oh, good, Nakamura kicked Aiden English in the throat? No, of course I didn't feel that way. I felt like, fuck you, Nakamura, for kicking Aiden English in the throat and taking away his beautiful angelic voice from me. And then when Rusev said, I will break you like you broke my Aiden, I was like, yeah, fuck yeah, break him like he broke your Aiden. I want you to kick him in the face, Rusev, because fuck Nakamura. That's not how I'm supposed to react to this.
I mean, also, I think you should really get in line with reality of what's going to happen.
Oh, I'm fully aware of what's going to happen. I mean, don't get worried for me. I'm not delusional here. Obviously, Nakamura is going to beat Rusev, and I'm going to get super upset about it. But, I mean, this makes absolutely zero sense. Because, obviously, I'm one of those people that, yeah, I'm going to be more behind Aiden English than most people. But right now, we're in a time on SmackDown where a lot of people are behind Aiden English by virtue of being part of Rusev Day, right? Everyone wants Rusev Day to be a thing. People are chanting Rusev Day on Raw. People are chanting Rusev Day on NXT. People are chanting Rusev Day at Ring of Honor, right? I mean, Rusev Day is becoming one of those chants where it's like, yeah, we want this guy to succeed. And I think, was it Mark on Twitter who asked us whether the Rusev Day chants were becoming the new CM Punk chants for disgruntled fans and whatnot? And I think the difference here, it reminds me a little bit more of the Daniel Bryan chants from like 2013-ish. Because Daniel Bryan was a guy that we wanted to be pushed. We wanted him to get in the spotlight. We wanted him to have good things. And he wasn't being used on TV, or he wasn't being used properly on TV. And that's more what this reminds me of. Not CM Punk chants. CM Punk chants started, you know, after CM Punk left. And that was to express dissatisfaction with the company, sure. But it wasn't to highlight an active performer. It was basically to be like, we are pissed off because you've created this climate that made CM Punk walk out after the Royal Rumble and made him leave. And we are dissatisfied with your product and we'll chant his name over and over and over. The Rusev Day chants, like the Daniel Bryan chants, are like, hey, there's this performer that you have on your roster currently and we would like to see more of him, please. And it's actively encouraging them to use and give better creative and tell a story with a performer that we love and want to see and want to spend money on. I mean, his merchandise is selling like crazy, right? He's the most popular guy on either roster. And it's baffling to me that this is all they have for him. I don't understand. And why are they putting Nakamura, who won the Royal Rumble, didn't even get booked on SmackDown that one week because they just didn't have anything but a video package for him. They want to put Nakamura, the guy you really want to like going into WrestleMania, building a dream match with AJ Styles, and they're going to put him against Rusev? Really? I mean, I'd rather see Nakamura versus Rusev than not a Nakamura match or not a Rusev match, because I think the match will be good. But just character-wise, it doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, it's a very weird decision, but I guess it's a match for Fastlane. Then we had the battle of who's less relevant between Becky Lynch and Carmella. Carmella's fallen off a cliff. Who would have thought that losing James Ellsworth would kill her character? And Becky Lynch is maybe the most pointless female performer in the company because she just does nothing ever.
I mean, and, she hangs about with Charlotte sometimes.
She gets so much of a bigger reaction than the way they push her.
Because like, she's a great performer and people want to see her used well. This is not her she needs to be used well.
She needs to go to Raw in the shakeup, without question. This is it's done for her on SmackDown. Just move it over. They have a match. It's fine. It's the usual kind of Becky and Carmella match, which is, it's never going to be that good, so, but it can get to a certain level of good.
Right, because Becky is a great performer. Carmella's not a great wrestler. And she was a great character, which sort of helped carry things because some of her matches would have weight behind them, right? Like when she was feuding with Nikki Bella, the matches weren't amazing, but there was actual weight behind their feud. This is just a match because they said some stuff to each other on Twitter, I guess, or something, which is kind of infuriating too because they set it up on social media and didn't really bother to set it up on television. Which is annoying. Like, I mean, they showed the backstage segment of Becky tweeting that she was going to take Carmella's arm or something. And it was just a feud about, I will tweet at you while I'm sitting next to you. What is happening? Oh, it's bad so stuff. Bad. It's so bad. And so what do you think about Carmella being Miss Money in the Bank now? Because I don't envision her cashing in soon. Like, I stand by my theory that she should be one of the, you know, she should hold the Money in the Bank contract until June, like until next Money in the Bank. And her time should, I don't think she should let it expire, but I think it needs to get close to the point of expiring and tell that story because she's, you know, like that's one of the last Money in the Bank stories to tell with someone. And also with the field the way it is right now, I don't envision her cashing in and winning anytime soon.
Well, so, somebody had this awful theory of, well, not awful, but it was just this terrifying, is can you imagine if Asuka beats Charlotte to win the title and then Carmella cashes in and ends her streak?
Well, I'm sure that that's what they're going to tease.
Tease it if you want, just don't do it.
Right.
I mean, imagine if Asuka and all these losses, Carmella.
I mean, it would be something.
Just doesn't bear thinking about. It
would be something.
Naomi and Natalya are backstage. Becky wins with a disarmer. Naomi and Natalya are backstage. And Naomi's like sassy. And then Natalya is like trying to talk.
She's but it's trying just... to be a mean girl. Because most of the SmackDown women's roster is comprised of mean girls now.
It looks like she watched Mean Girls from 2004 and is trying to replicate it. But she's not Natalya. And she is the worst actress on the earth.
And
so...
also, is her gear trying to consume her?
I thought her gear was trying to escape from her. Like, her gear was, like, so cringed by her general, you know, voice and demeanor that it was just trying to get out.
See, I felt like she was just, like, sinking into the gear. Like, I don't know, when you put on an evil robot suit or something and it becomes part of you.
See, I was hoping a couple of months ago that maybe SmackDown would become, like, Stockholm Syndrome, where I would just start enjoying it even though it was terrible.
No, it hasn't gotten there. No.
But and basically, they have a thing back and forth, which is going to mean that Naomi makes a challenge for Naomi and Becky against Natalya and Carmella for Fastlane, which I was thinking, I mean, at least they've got, like, those 372 six-women tags that they can go back and get that for, like, a hype video.
Great. I'm so excited about all of this.
Ugh.
It's just nothing. It's just a whole lot of nothing.
So they basically used the second hour to try and tell a story with the five of the six-pack challenge people. AJ Styles comes out, says that there was a time when he only cared about himself. After winning the title, he now cares about them. Ugh. The odds are against him because he doesn't have to get pinned to lose the title, but he's going to fight because that's what he does.
Captain Exposition.
He said John Cena beat him last week. He didn't make any excuses, but he didn't need motivation. He showed Cena's promo from last night. He says he's not the only one who has to pave his way to WrestleMania. I just can't get past now, like Finn Martin had written, and please do go read his great articles on Patreon. He did one on the who he thinks should go in the Hall of Fame. He didn't put Hillbilly Jim in, funnily enough, but anyway. And then he actually, do you know, I'm gonna find this 2 seconds. So Finn messaged me yesterday at the blue, like DM'd me on Facebook, and he just said, "Let me find it because it was good, it cracked me up." Because you could just imagine Finn saying this in his Finn voice. Where is it? Here we go. I said, "Oh, I'll speak to you to record the podcast." And said, "Okay, Hillbilly Jim, they're off their fucking rockers."
Yes, I can definitely imagine him saying that in his Finn voice.
But Anyway, so Finn had made a great point in his other kind of wrestling roundup point where Vince McMahon has been genius. And do you know who the biggest star of WrestleMania is?
Stephanie?
WrestleMania.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Everybody's fighting to get to WrestleMania. WrestleMania is the star. So it now just can't go out of my mind. And then especially when AJ's saying, it's not just you that's to pave your way to WrestleMania. You know, he said that John had said that he could have the rematch at WrestleMania, make it a triple threat. That's not what he wants or what the fans want. He wants to have his moment, defend the title against Nakamura. It's a dream match. He was fighting for us because that match would be phenomenal. And then the stupid, stupid record scratch thing happens. And Dolph Ziggler comes out.
Ew.
Now, Dolph Ziggler did do an interview, I think it was some podcast last week, where he talked about how he had to beg for time off from the company, and he wanted like 6 months and they only gave him 6 weeks. To which I say, why didn't you leave then?
Right? I mean, I understand. I'm sure that they're giving him plenty of money, and leaving that kind of contract is difficult, right? Because it's guaranteed. Whatever happens, like, he is guaranteed a paycheck, and I'm sure he's probably not like bottom of the barrel either. For some reason, they see value in Dolph Ziggler. But
I saw it in 2013.
Yeah, all the times that he talks about, right? I mean, he talks again in this promo about how he is the greatest wrestler. I mean, he is Jeff Jarrett all over. Like, he is 100% Jeff Jarrett. Because he's talking about how he's the greatest wrestler and how he became world heavyweight champion and all this stuff. And every time he talks about all of these accomplishments from 2013, 2014, it just makes him sadder. Because it's like, you haven't done anything since then. And it feels like, you know, the guy who's returning to high school to be like, hey, remember? He's like Uncle Rico in Napoleon Dynamite, right? He's like, yeah, you know, when I was in the big game and I was awesome and that was great. And he's like watching old footage of himself. And it's like, it's been 5 years.
He comes out and he calls out AJ for talking about, you know, the match being for us and it's not cool and he's not phenomenal anymore. Now he's just desperate. I mean, being called desperate by Dolph Ziggler is like the biggest burn you can ever receive.
I mean, it did make me laugh so hard that Dolph Ziggler was calling anyone desperate. But then because I was still like pretty sick when I was watching it, I was like, oh, but now my throat hurts more and I'm laughing and this isn't good. Fuck Dolph Ziggler and throw him into the sun.
And then AJ Styles says that, you know, that's rich coming from a guy who's been in WWE 13 years and never reached his potential. To which Ziggler says the guy that spent 10 years trying to get into the house that he built. I mean, who could care? And then Dolph Ziggler pressed play on the same Dolph Ziggler promo we've heard for the last 9 months, where he talks about, you know, the odds have been stacked against him and he'd never make it, and he's knocked down every barrier on his way, and he's cashed in money in the bank, and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, we get it. You think you're great. Are we supposed to believe that Dolph Ziggler's a babyface now? Is that what's happening?
I can't tell. I thought so.
Do we know? Because it seemed like it last week, but now he's coming out to confront AJ Styles.
I don't know. I have no clue.
It's not good that we don't know. And also, none of it makes any sense. Why would he come back as a babyface? Or even a tweener? Like, he should be a heel. Except for, I don't really want to see him in that role. He needs to go to the sun, is what needs to happen.
Do you know what you could do? They could send Dolph Ziggler to NXT.
No. NXT doesn't need him. Although, you know what? Actually, it could be an interesting story to tell. Like, the grizzled old vet who has been there forever and goes to NXT. And it could be an interesting story. I mean, he would have to be a heel who lords everything over everyone and then also still loses. Maybe he could join the Undisputed Era.
I mean, from a distance, you couldn't tell him and Adam Cole apart if they were wearing clothes.
Yeah, but Dolph Ziggler's hair is so puffy.
That's true. He did make one interesting point where he said that he's been there 13 years and he's never had a singles match at WrestleMania, and that's criminal, which was interesting.
That should be the story. That is an interesting story to tell. He's just kind of stealing what the Usos have been saying at this point, right? Because that's a lot of the Uso New Day story is that the Usos have never actually been on proper WrestleMania because they keep getting put on the pre-show. And so for Dolph Ziggler to say he's never had a singles match at WrestleMania, which isn't something that I realized, I think that is pretty interesting. That could be a compelling story. But I think one of the problems with Dolph Ziggler as a character, and one of the reasons I just keep saying throw him into the sun, is I don't think that he as a performer, and I don't think that WWE as a company, understand that Dolph Ziggler the character needs to stop cutting that very same promo. I feel like they think if he just sounds impassioned and sounds like, you know, there's weight behind his words and he's so passionate that people will get behind him again. But it's past that point. We are past the point of caring about Dolph Ziggler and his success because he's just talking about things from 5 years ago all the time. If Dolph Ziggler talked about now, if Dolph Ziggler talked about current accomplishments that he wanted to achieve. I mean, the last interesting Dolph Ziggler story was when Dolph Ziggler faced The Miz and put his career on the line because it felt like an act of desperation and it felt like an immediate goal that he wanted now. And he won that and then everything went to shit, right? But it was interesting for a moment. And I maintain a lot of that was because of The Miz, but it was maybe the last interesting story to tell with Dolph Ziggler and then it still got super boring.
The problem was, though, the story had to end with him beating The Miz. That was how the story should have ended. But the problem was, once that had happened, he had to be the Intercontinental Champion as a babyface. And then it all went back to what it was. So I do feel bad for the guy because he is talented and he is good. But he's just been around so long. And, like, it's that Jim Cornette thing. How can I miss you if you won't go away? And six weeks is not long enough.
No, it's not.
So it ends up that we're going to have a match with these two, Dolph Ziggler versus AJ Styles, which is like, I feel like watching this match is like if you're a pregnant woman and you can't eat cheese anymore, but you know the cheese is good, but it just makes you sick if you try and eat it. I know this is good, just don't want to see it. Can't do it.
Yeah, I mean, it was, as a match, I'm sure it was good. Like, I did watch it. I couldn't tell you really anything that happened. Part of the issue, too, is that Dolph Ziggler wrestles the same match all the time. You know, like he is good. He is good at wrestling and he is good at bumping around and stuff. But it's one of those he only has one gear. It's a higher gear than some of the people who wrestle a more slow, methodical type match. But he never shifts into another gear. I think you and Robert talked about that ages ago, and it's always stuck in my mind. So you just, you know, like he's always kind of bumping around, getting near falls with the zigzag or the famouser or whatever, and then losing. Like that's the Dolph Ziggler match. That's what happens.
Yep, it's a problem. Anyway, they have a match. It's fine. I kept looking at my phone because I was bored. But same. In the end, Ziggler goes for a zigzag, but then Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn come out. They start beating them both of them down. And then Shane McMahon comes out, of course, because an opportunity has arisen for him to stop Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. And he told them that he basically said that he, you know, you're expecting me to make a tag match, but instead I'm going to make a fatal five-way match with Baron Corbin as well. So before we talk about the match, did you hear what Dave Meltzer had written in The Observer this week about Sami and Kevin?
No. Do I want to?
Are you sitting down?
Yes. Oh, no.
The current plan, as of right now, looks like there's not going to be any Shane McMahon match at WrestleMania.
That's fine.
There's not going to be anything with Shane and Brian.
Right.
So why don't Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn are doing at WrestleMania?
Fighting each other?
The current plan is for them to both be in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal.
Okay, what the fuck? That's a joke, right?
Nope.
Okay, I just need to collect myself for a moment. What the ever-loving fuck are they doing? What? No, that makes no sense. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn have been your top heels on SmackDown. They have been the main focus of story on SmackDown. They are trying to save this show. And you're going to put them in the fucking Battle Royal? The ones who have been feuding with Shane McMahon and have been seriously like the central piece to all of SmackDown Live since October. You're going to put them in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal of Doom of Nothing. No, that is unacceptable. That is fucking bullshit. What the fuck? I really didn't know about this, and I'm pretty shocked.
Like, what they should do, what I think they should do, and I know you don't want to see it, but I think that the story should be Shane McMahon and a partner against Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. That should be the story. They've done all this stuff all these months. You know, you could do something where, like, Kevin and Sami are maybe not on the same page, so you think Shane's got a better chance, and then it ends up they are on the same page or whatever, but not in the Battle Royal.
No.
Like, I mean, you know, it's funny. I was thinking
Kevin,
the other day,
like, I wanted to see Kevin versus Sami just because I didn't want to see more Shane McMahon shenanigans, right? But, I mean, at this point, Shane McMahon and bloody Randy Orton versus Kevin and Sami would be better than the fucking Battle Royal.
I think that, like, I totally had a thought there. It's gone.
It's okay. SmackDown's killing your soul, too.
It's killing my brain. I just think that I was thinking the other day, I was like, there's so many things on WrestleMania this year, more than usual, that I was struggling to see whether we're going to make time for everything. And I guess not having... The thing for me is, like, as much as the Shane McMahon storyline has been kind of infuriating since January, that just have somewhere for it to play out. Something has to play out. Surely. Like, because I would much rather see something play out at WrestleMania than see it all just go away.
There has
because
to
then
have
why...
been a point to all of this torture, right?
Uh-huh. You would think. I mean, because they didn't have anything on this show to do with Shane and Daniel Bryan.
Well,
so
Daniel Bryan wasn't even on
it. I guess we'll see. Exactly. So I wonder if, is anything going to happen on Sunday that involves them? Or, I mean, next Tuesday, I'm actually pretty interested at SmackDown next week because they have to start building to WrestleMania and there are only is it even 4 episodes of SmackDown?
I don't know. I mean, it's less than a month away now.
So Tuesday is going to be the 13th. Oh yeah, so there's 4 episodes of SmackDown left to WrestleMania. So they basically have to start building the card for the SmackDown side. So yeah, I'm curious what they do. I can't see the Battle Royal thing panning out, especially because it's kind of like out in the ether. I think enough people will be ready. I mean, last year, with all the goodwill in the world, I don't necessarily think the SmackDown women, at that point, the story was interesting enough that they had to be in the main card at WrestleMania, but people still fought for them to be. So I would imagine that Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens would be like 10 times more of people going, no. Do not do this to them. Now, the other thing is...
Well, you would think, but the SmackDown women were already scheduled in a match. So, I mean, they basically moved matches around to get them on the main card, which I still appreciated because, you know, like, the women's time on WrestleMania still wasn't great because... And it was all multi-women matches, and it was kind of infuriating. Things look to be better this year, but I mean, scheduling a whole nother match might be more difficult to arrange.
Now, the other thing is the Andre the Giant documentary is coming out in April. It's the week after WrestleMania, and I'm actually pretty excited about it. I heard really good things. And the idea is that they're going to make the Battle Royal a really big deal this year. Now, if it ends up that, like, Sami and Kevin and Shane are all in it, and they're, like, an integral part, and they're the final part, and it's built really bigly, then fine. But it's, you know, as of right now, we know the Battle Royal for what it is. And that is not anything to be prestigious about. Like, somebody had put in the Facebook community, they were like, I hope Drew McIntyre comes into the Battle Royal and wins it. And I'm like, leave Drew out of that thing.
Yeah. I mean, I still fight myself to not call it the Antonio Cesaro Memorial Battle Royal because I got in trouble that one year because everyone was like, did Antonio Cesaro die? And I'm like, no, he lost his first name.
So we ended up getting this five-way,
so
which is... He did. So we get this five-way with AJ, Dolph, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Baron Corbin. Pretty good, to be honest. It was a pretty fun match. They were all doing their finishers and all doing moves on each other. It was fun.
Yeah, but it's this infuriating WWE thing where they're basically giving us the match we were supposed to get at Fastlane before John Cena butted in, right? And so they're essentially giving us 5/6 of the match from Sunday on Tuesday to build to the match on Sunday. Like, here, let's build to this match by having the match. I hate that. I hate that so much, Kenny. It infuriates me.
I appreciated it because at least it meant that the last half hour or 20 minutes I was actually like interested in watching it, which I probably wouldn't have been for anything else. Like, if they'd have done another one-on-one with like Baron Corbin and AJ, I'd have probably just been on my phone the whole time. But in the end, I'm trying to think. So AJ hit a phenomenal forearm. AJ was going to hit a phenomenal forearm in Sami Zayn, but then Corbin and Ziggler came in, and then basically as Kevin Owens was distracted, he turns around into a haluva kick from Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn gets the win, gets the 1-2-3. AJ is dumbfounded like at ringside because obviously he's, you know, this could happen on Sunday, which gives me hope that it does not happen because it did happen here. Mm-hmm. And then Sami stands triumphantly, and then he's asked about why he did it. He said he's the best WWE has, the most underlooked man in the roster. Tonight wasn't about the WWE title, it was about who was the best, and he proved that Sami Zayn. And they go off there. So they've given you some intrigue. Sami said he will lie down for Kevin, but he also did a wee sneaky here and beat Kevin. So they left you with something interesting in the Fastlane, which I appreciated.
Yeah, I appreciated that too. I mean, I was tuned out for most of this match because I was just raging that it was happening. And I mean, it's very similar to just AJ Styles versus Dolph Ziggler for me. And the five-way isn't any more interesting just because it isn't. Like, I've seen all of these guys fight various combinations of one another. I'm going to see them fight again on Sunday. Whatever. It is what it is. But no, Kevin Owens pinning Sami Zayn pinning Kevin Owens was very interesting to me, for sure, because it makes sense logically, right? Because even if Sami does plan to lie down for Kevin on Sunday, which I believe he still might plan to, because if the plan right now between the two of them is for Kevin to become the WWE champion, then, you know, Sami might get a title shot from Kevin, right? And I mean, I guess you could say, well, why doesn't he just want to become the champion himself? But if Sami Zayn has beaten Kevin Owens and Kevin becomes the champion, then Sami does have a claim. I mean, obviously Shinsuke Nakamura is going to face the champion at WrestleMania, but Sami has a claim out there for future, right? And I think that adds layers of intrigue, and that kind of builds toward Kevin Owens versus Sami Zayn. And I mean, this match not being about the title, yeah, of course Sami would want to win this match, because this isn't, you know, this didn't have title implications. If it's about being the best and if it's about proving yourself, then yeah, Sami has been overlooked. Sami has always been the one that Kevin has shoved aside. Kevin has always been like, no, you don't, you know, you're not on my level. Kevin attacked him on Kevin's first night in NXT and the night that Sami won the championship. I mean, all of those feelings are still going to be there. They might be best friends right now, and they might seriously want to help one another and be, you know, a really good pair and a really good team. But it's not like all that bad blood just goes away. It's, you know, like, they're brothers. They're going to fight over this stuff, and it will happen again and again and again, and they are destined to fight forever. And this is kind of showing those cracks. And also, I like that it's Sami Zayn standing up for himself, because he is the one that's constantly beaten down, and that's the thing that led to his whole heel turn and saving Kevin Owens from Shane McMahon and everything in the first place, right? Is wanting to get a spotlight and wanting to have an opportunity. So I think it all makes logical sense, and I like it as story progression. I like it a lot, and it should be building to Kevin Owens versus fucking Sami Zayn and not a battle royal.
I mean, I don't doubt that Dave Meltzer has heard that, but this booking to me did not scream that they're going in the battle royal.
No.
It doesn't. But do you know what? What I will give them, and you know, this could be me setting myself up for a failure, I don't think I've been as interested in an episode of SmackDown as I will be this week for months, because I finally feel like the noose of Fastlane will be off us, and they kind of have to go full tilt towards WrestleMania. So I'm intrigued about what Shane McMahon's going to do, Randy Orton's going to do, Sami Zayn's going to do, Kevin Owens.
And I guess we'll see if there are any shenanigans at Fastlane too. I guess that's one of the slightly mildly intriguing things about Fastlane, is will there be shenanigans to set up what's going to happen on Tuesday, or are they really just going to start the build on Tuesday after Fastlane is done?
That is the question. There's two interesting matches on Sunday, the tag title match and the six-pack challenge. That's pretty much all that you need to watch. We're going to be podcasting about it, of course. But Sandra, we've managed to get through this together. I feel like we've propped each other up. Where can people find you on Twitter if they want to come say hi and celebrate you as part of International Women's Day, because you have a vagina?
I do. That is accurate. And yeah, I appreciated some of the shout outs for yesterday. It was kind of cool. Go women. But yeah, find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. If you want to talk about 205 Live, especially because I have a lot of feelings about 205 Live, and I know we don't have time to really like go into it, but check out Mustafa Ali versus Buddy Murphy from this week because it is excellent and gave me all sorts of feelings. Mustafa Ali.
Oh, fuck.
Well, so now we're getting Mustafa Ali versus Drew Gulak for the Battle of My Heart. And Mustafa Ali is awesome, Kenny. I think Mustafa Ali might be the best babyface on the entire roster. Not named.
But I really like, I really like him. I just like Buddy Murphy.
Oh, I love Buddy Murphy. I love Buddy Murphy. And I wanted Buddy Murphy to win, like, until the match started. And then I was like, yeah, but I really love Mustafa Ali so much, too. The match is excellent. I really, really enjoyed it. Drew Gulak versus Mark Andrews was pretty good, too. I don't know. Mark Andrews has just never really clicked for me. And please don't yell at me, but it's just one of those things. But yeah, Drew Gulak versus Mark Andrews was pretty good. Drew Gulak won, which is exactly what I wanted to happen. So... yeah, 205 Live, the tournament continues to be awesome, and I highly recommend watching that instead of SmackDown. Oh, and also Hideo Itami and Akira Tozawa are a tag team now.
I'm not going to say a word. Anyway.
where can people find you on Twitter, Kenny?
KennyMC1985 if you want to find me. Inside_the ropes for the brand. Get your tickets to Paul Heyman at insidetheropes.co.uk/Paul Heyman. They are limited in VIP. Go ahead and make your plans. We are going to sell out in New Orleans. So come join us. You never know what Paul Heyman is going to say on maybe the last appearance before WrestleMania, before he leaves. You never know. With that said, who's going to play us out this week, Sandra?
I think we should play Sami Zayn's music.
Okay, so remember, if you miss us and you want more of us, do go to patreon.com/InsideTheRopes to hear us talk about Fastlane on Monday and to hear all of our other stuff on there as well. Thank you very much for listening to us. Here is Sami Zayn. We'll see you next week, everybody. Bye.
Bye.